Blog Talk Radio.
In the world sports. When we return, we will talk
about the San Antonio Spurs, and I'll tell you why the NBA didn't have a leg to stand on. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. winning percentage and dignity, all the, you combine all the good things that about a particular organization, San Antonio Spurs to me are at the top of the food chain. Food chain in the Greg Popovich era, especially in the Greg Popovich Tim Duncan era. Since 1997. Okay. Greg Popovich understands, you know, you have three players, 30 and over with Parker, Duncan, Ginobili. He understands that they cannot win a championship going hard every night or guys playing a significant amount of minutes over an 82-game season, didn't have anything left for the playoffs. He gets it. But to ask Greg Popovich to think about the fans of Miami over his team trying to win a championship is just not realistic. Greg Popovich does not work for the fans of Miami. Greg Popovich works for Peter Holt and R.C. Buford. Those are his employers. And this whole idea, you know, prior to this, there was no protocol on, you know, on how to alert the league or alert the team that I'm going to sit my players. Why does he have to say anything? This is a basketball decision. And the idea that he should be looking out for the Miami fans because they only see San Antonio once a year is crazy. Well, you know, he should have did this at home. So let me get this straight. He's supposed to make his own home fans of San Antonio suffer by missing a game. The people who, you know, his season ticket holders, make them suffer versus non-Miami fans, non-San Antonio Spurs fans. You take care of your peoples first. Again, I think the NBA doesn't have a leg to stand on. They're going to give you the whole business aspect of it. I'm not buying it. I'm Greg Popovich. I would have did this thing a million times over in terms of sitting my players. Only thing I take umbrage with Popovich is sitting Danny Green. Danny Green is 25 years old. You can play. Parker, 30-year-old point guard, gets beat up a lot. Duncan, Ginobili have had recurring injuries over the past few years, especially Ginobili. Understandable. Danny Green is 25 years old. You're playing. You're playing, and you're not a superstar. Bottom line, you're playing. So that would have been, you know, and it shows you how much he respects Danny Green, though, and how good Danny Green has gotten. And Danny Green certainly is a very good three-point shooter and has developed nicely, but you're playing. There's no two ways about it. I mean, I think Gary Neal is every bit as good as Danny Green, to be honest with you. And they went out there and almost beat Miami with basically no team. And that was a close game. So, again, to me, the NBA does not have a leg to stand on in this situation. I'm totally with the San Antonio Spurs and Greg Popovich. Popovich, 4 championships, best coach in the NBA, one of the great coaches of all time, to me has earned the right to do this. And so it'll be very interesting to see how many teams, you know, follow this. And that's probably, you know, one of the reasons why the NBA is scared. Because this could become a reoccurring thing, but could become a reoccurring thing for the future. So keep your eyes on this. Again, I'm with Popovich, not the NBA. David Stern again trying to play dictator, and just I'm not buying it this time with the NBA. So 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll have the Redskins report. Had the Redskins report. Redskins Monday Night Football probably having their biggest game in about 5 years. We'll talk about that. Is RG3 an MVP candidate? We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. 215-6180. As we discuss the world of sports, a busy sports weekend. Again, we are still trying to see we know it's going to happen, but trying to find out who the player is that committed suicide, the Kansas City Chiefs player that committed suicide, killed his girlfriend and committed suicide in the Arrowhead Stadium parking lot. Information still has, of course, has not been released. This just happened this morning. We talked about it as we were beginning the show. NFL, certainly you should know something. I would guess you should know something before the day is out. It was a gunshot wound. So that's one detail that can be confirmed. And, you know, right now all we know is that the player played for the Kansas City Chiefs, killed his girlfriend and then shot himself in the Kansas City Chiefs parking lot. That's all I know right now. Certainly some details should be following soon. I would think that name will come out before the day is over. There's no way that they can hide that for an entire day. It's just, you know, this is not in today's media world. So with just that, and certainly I'm sure some stuff will follow in terms of some details in the upcoming days. But that just happened as we were coming on the show, as we were beginning the show. Again, a big football weekend, big football day, college football day, with some of these conference championship games. A lot of, certainly the BCS conference, BCS spots are on the line. As of right now, teams, you can look at the teams that will be in the BCS, that will be in the BCS spot. You know, Nebraska-Wisconsin winner will play Stanford in the Rose Bowl. You have Notre Dame already, you know, securing their place in the national championship. You have the winner of the Texas-Kansas State game. If Kansas State loses and Oklahoma wins, Oklahoma will get that BCS spot. Oklahoma will get a BCS spot if that is the case, and Kansas State will be out. Of course, Alabama-Georgia, the winner of that will play for the national championship. and the loser will be probably in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. I mean, it's just that is that big of a drop off. Florida State plays Georgia Tech. Florida State plays Georgia Tech today, so a big weekend, a big Saturday of college football. We'll talk about that over the course of the show as we begin with the Redskin report. Washington Redskins come in to this Monday night show now with these New York Giants at 5-6, but it's not your typical 5-6. This is a 5-6 where you have a Redskin team that's coming off back-to-back divisional victories. They're coming off, to me, their most impressive victory of the season against the Dallas Cowboys. And you have a surging Washington Redskins team. Look at now. The division, to me, has been wrapped up. I mean, I think what the Giants did against Green Bay last Sunday night wrapped up the division. From my standpoint, they're now 2-4 games ahead of Washington and Dallas. They split against Dallas. They beat Washington already once. So I think the Giants will win this division unless they have a great collapse. I think they will win this division. But listen, as we know before in the NFL, if you watch watch a ton of NFL football over the past couple of years, you know the only thing you have to do is get in the dance and be healthy. If you make it to the playoffs and you're healthy, you have a chance. And right now, there's not one team that would want to see the Washington Redskins in the playoffs with the way that RG3 is playing. The Dallas win, to me, was as impressive a win that the Redskins have had in the last 5 years. I mean, let's be honest, and definitely in the Mike Shanahan era. You go down there Thanksgiving Day to a Dallas team that was starting to play better in Dallas, and RG3, Alfred Morris, you know, Pierre Garçon just dominate the game. After the shaky first quarter, Redskins just did whatever they wanted to offensively and were able to hold on, of course, 38-28. So you get a divisional win, you knock off Dallas, you get a road win, and you get basically a bye week playing on Thursday afternoon. The Redskins covered all their bases on that particular Thursday. And got a win that shot them right back into the playoff hunt. And keep this in mind. There's some teams, you know, Minnesota, Tampa Bay, all teams that are ahead of the Redskins. Minnesota, Tampa Bay, are all ahead of the Redskins for the playoff race, but they have beaten all those teams. So they would have the tiebreaker over all those teams. And again, Seattle, you know, who knows with this with this Richard Sherman Browner situation in terms of their two of the best cornerbacks having a positive drug test. They'll probably play this week, but they certainly are going to miss some time. Could miss some time later on over the course of this last month of this season. Who knows how that plays out? And if both those guys are missing, Seattle's going to be in deep trouble because that defense is predicated on those quarterbacks. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. They are the best set of young quarterbacks in football. Richard Sherman has been called by many outside Darrelle Revis to be the best quarterback in football besides Darrelle Revis. So things have certainly are breaking the Redskins' way. Pierre Garçon, you saw him look healthy, even though you know the toe is still bothering him. He played well. Aldrick Robinson is becoming that deep threat that the Redskins haven't had in a long time, and he's good for at least one big catch a game. So again, Redskins have a lot going for them right now. And again, this game coming up against the New York Giants is as meaningful and as important of a game that the Redskins have had since 2007, which is the last time they made the playoffs. I mean, you think about it. When is the last time the Redskins played meaningful football games after Thanksgiving? And you probably would have to go back to 2007 to 2007 to find that out. If you're a Redskin fan, there's no excuse whatsoever. If you're, if you're a big time Redskin fan, not to be at the game on Monday night. That stadium should be 90,000 at capacity. You have a reason. You have, to me, the most electrified player in football right now in RG3. And again, I believe RG3 should be considered as a legit MVP candidate. There's no question in my mind. When you consider what he's done, the numbers, he's going to have, statistically, he's going to have the best rookie season of all time as a quarterback, statistically. I mean, that's when you combine his rushing and the fact that he only has 4 interceptions. When you consider how many of his weapons have been hurt, whether it's Garcon, Fred Davis being out, with the defense, all the defensive players the Redskins have had missing, it has basically been borderline, other than with Tillman, Alfred Morris, basically a two-man show for the Washington Redskins. But again, certainly it will be the acid test against the New York Giants Monday night. The Giants, again, showed you why they are who they are on Sunday night. They manhandled the Packers. The Packers don't match up well against the Giants physically. They can't block the Giants. Not too many people can when the Giants pass rush is going. But Giants served notice on Sunday night that they are still a team to be reckoned with, as up and down as they can be coming off, coming off two bad losses. Giants showed you what they were all about on Monday night. And again, it should be, again, Redskins went toe-to-toe with the Giants earlier this season. It should be a very good game. I think the Redskins are a better team now than when they first faced the Giants. And I saw a very interesting stat. Eli Manning in his career is 11-5 against the Redskins, but statistically, he has 13 touchdowns and 15 interceptions. So the Redskins have done a pretty good job of defending against Eli Manning. The thing that has killed the Redskins against the Giants in these past years is turnovers. And that is killer. When Tom Coughlin era, Redskins have played the Giants. Redskins have just turned over the ball left and right against the Giants. So again, it should be a great game on Monday night football. Redskins get their first prime time. Thanksgiving was prime time, but their first night game. The first night televised game of the season, first Monday night game, Monday night or Sunday night game televised the season. And the Redskins, listen, the Redskins keep playing the way they're playing. They're going to be, I guarantee you, they will put the Redskins on one of these flex games that NBC has and for Sunday night. There's no question about it. 347-215-6180 is your call number. We'll be right back on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. 5 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 347-215-6180 is your call number. Get still monitoring this Kansas City Chiefs player, unidentified Kansas City Chiefs player that's committed suicide outside of an Arrowhead Stadium parking lot. Not only he killed himself, he killed his girlfriend. The only thing we know is that the guy, of course, played for the Kansas City Chiefs. He killed his girlfriend, and he died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So that's all we know right now. Some things are starting to come out now, as they say that it was a black male in the car. So, again, it's only a matter of time before, a couple of hours before, not you don't get everything, but you get who it is. This happened, of course, in the Kansas City neighborhood. We'll get back to that. We are joined now by the Moose, Mark Melusis. Good morning, Mark. How you doing?
What's going on, Terrell? How are you?
Not too much. Did you hear about this? Kansas City football player killing himself and his girlfriend in the parking lot this morning?
Yeah, I just saw the initial report, yes.
That's unbelievable. I don't know, you think they'll play the game? Because Kansas City plays Carolina tomorrow.
I think they'll play the game. I'm not really sure. The information we have now is, he hasn't been identified, and I think we'll learn more and more as the afternoon goes along.
I couldn't believe when I heard that.
NFL told the Panthers to travel, so I imagine that they will play the game tomorrow, 1 o'clock.
Yeah, that probably is definitely the key to that whole situation, that the fact that the Panthers are traveling. Mark, how you doing this morning?
I'm hanging in there. How about yourself?
Pretty good, pretty good. Tough one on Thursday, Mark. Mark Melusis, of course, works at SNY and also does Rutgers football pre- and post-game. 14-3, looking like Rutgers is in just total control, and then all of a sudden, the proverbial wheels come off and just one of those situations. I couldn't believe what I was watching. And again, I know these are basically two evenly matched teams. Louisville is very good as well, but I couldn't believe it, Mark. And this, all the momentum that Rutgers had in that game, for them to lose a game the way they did, what has been kind of like the reaction down in the New York, New Jersey area from that loss?
Yeah, well, it's a crushing loss, no question about it, with a Big East title, the BCS bowl berth on the line, leading 14-3 at the half, and, a number of things the Scarlet Knights did wrong in the second half: drop passes, the penalty on the apparent touchdown on the fake field goal, illegal man downfield, the fumble by Deering on the kickoff, and, in the span of, 16 or 21 seconds, something of that, the Cardinals and Bridgewater were able to put two touchdowns up on the board, erase an 11-point lead, 11-point deficit, and actually take a 3-point lead. So it was stunning in a lot of – very, very disappointing, stunning in a lot of different aspects. Bridgewater was brilliant, playing with, a fractured left wrist and a severely sprained left ankle. So, he was – unbelievable, and the Cardinals have got themselves a hell of a quarterback. But from a Scarlet Knight perspective, it was as bad as it gets, and a very bitter pill. Losing their last two games against Pittsburgh, against Louisville. If they win either one of the two, they're your Big East champs here in 2012. That's not the case, and they will not be heading to the BCS bowl game, and Louisville will.
Yeah, Louisville, it hasn't been confirmed yet, but they are projected to be they are certainly projected to get that BCS spot from the Big East. Now, despite that loss, it's amazing how far this program has come in the last 10 years. If we if I told you that we would be having this type of conversation back in 2000, 2001, you know, you would probably have been laughing at me. But are you, like, and you're from that area, how surprised are you that this program is at a level to where it can compete for BCS bowls and conference championships? I mean, again, considering where they were not too long ago, what do you think has been the key to that ascension?
Recruiting. I mean, they, you know, Shiana did a great job of recruiting and raising the level of the program and the team, and it was a slow, arduous process, but the better talent you get in, the better team you're just going to play, the better your team's going to play, and that's really what it comes down to. You know, they started winning games, going to bowl games. You know, they had an opportunity to tie for the Big East crown last year. They lost their last game against UConn, which was disappointing. They had an opportunity to win the outright Big East title this year, ended up, you know, tying for the Big East crown. But still, at the end of the day, it comes down to talent, Cyril, and they were able, Jersey's always produces a number of very, very good Division I college athletes every year, and they've been able to keep their share in the Garden State, which is a big-time key.
What do you think has been the main draw? Because you just mentioned it, the key to building any program, especially football, is keeping your state top talent within your state. What has been the draw for somebody from New Jersey to go play at Rutgers? I mean, a lot of Jersey players.
Well, I mean, it's a state school, you know. It's be able to stay home and play, you know, good Division One, you know, very good Division One college football. Have an opportunity for your family to watch you play, you know, to, you know, stay in-house. And, you know, the fact that they've been a winning program. You know, they haven't won national championships and haven't won, you know, outright conference titles. But certainly the very fact that they're going to be heading to the Big Ten raises their Q rating. Certainly that some guys, when you have the ability to tell a high school kid that you're, you know, going to be playing the likes of Michigan and Ohio State and, you know, Wisconsin and Nebraska and, you know, Michigan State, you know, that's going to be very, very intriguing for the fact that, you know, now a kid from Jersey can stay in the home state and play big-time schools and play big-time college football. So, I mean, I think that's been the big-time selling point. You got to win. They have won. It's been a slow process, but they've won a number of bowl games. You know, they've, you know, not the ones on New Year's Day, but they've been a winning college football program, and that's really one leads to another. You have to start getting the players in, and then you have to take advantage of the talent and start winning football games. And then the more you win, the more consistent you are, then you become a more viable option for a 17- or 18-year-old kid.
Do you think, because it's kind of a little bit similar, maybe, I mean, some different, you know, some differentials between them and Virginia Tech. But I think when I look at how they're doing it and how they've done it, I kind of look at Virginia Tech as well, because Virginia Tech started with nobody paying attention to them, and then all of a sudden, you know, Frank Beamer comes in and they become, you know, a legit top 15, top 10 program. Can they get to the, based on the fact that they've moved to the Big Ten, they're going to get more national exposure, have more money as far as resources. Can they get to that level and have a similar type thing that Virginia Tech has?
I think they can. I mean, you know, I think they can. I mean, I think first off, I mean, I think it's going to be, you know, a process moving to another conference and getting used to playing those schools when you've been used to playing the schools that, you know, many have left now. And, you know, they weren't successful against West Virginia. But I think now it's a matter of getting bigger, better, stronger, you know, and the very fact that they have to raise the talent level and understand what now it means to go out there and win in the Big Ten. Now they have a path, though. I mean, they, you know, team goes undefeated in the Big East. You know, should they, could they potentially play for a national championship? They could, but the Big East is kind of looked at football-wise, not basketball, football-wise, as kind of a conference that is not on the level of the other major conferences throughout the country. And now, by joining the Big Ten, they have that path. You know, it's certainly a difficult task, but now the idea of, you know, can you win a national championship? Damn right you can. If you go undefeated in the Big Ten, you're going to be playing for a national title.
No question about it. And, of course, 2014, the Big East will lose its, you know, that automatic BCS bid. What, to me, Mark, I mean, it's a no-brainer that Rutgers goes to the Big Ten, not only football-wise, but obviously financial-wise, but also football-wise. That, to me, was an easy move. I don't understand people criticizing them or Maryland for going to the Big Ten. What does the rest of the Big East going to look like in the future of the Big East? I will be, because, you know, I'm looking at these teams, and I thought that when, you know, when ACC teams started leaving the ACC, and I'm thinking, like, the ACC in another 2 or 3 years is going to be basically non-existent. How is the Big East going to be able to sell their conference when you won't have a marquee team from a football standpoint in there?
It's a great question, man. I don't know where the Big East goes from here. I really don't. I mean, you know, adding the East Carolinas of the world from, you know, what the conference is going to be moving forward, I'm not sure what they do. Maybe they, you know, just be a basketball league. I'm not really sure exactly where the conference is going to go. I mean, it's, you know, there's going to be, it's no longer the Big East. It's no longer what it once was, which is a shame. Money does rule all. I can't blame anybody for leaving the Big East, you know, but once the defection started happening, you know, someone described it as, to me as, you know, the Big East has become, you know, a feeder conference, and it certainly has. I mean, it started with Boston College and Miami, and then, you know, Syracuse and Pittsburgh and West Virginia, and now Rutgers, and then it was Louisville leading to the ACC. Now UConn's left out in the cold. I mean, really what it comes down to is the Big East is a shell of what it used to be.
I mean, well, Mark, and you know as well as I do, you know, it doesn't matter about, you know, what, you know, the traditional rivalries that we had. When you look at Duke, North Carolina basketball, Syracuse, Georgetown basketball, it's all driven by football money. If you don't have, if you're not generating football money, then, you know, your conference, I mean, your conference can't stand up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very fair. I mean, football is the driving force. There's no question, you know, you're dead on correct about that. And you've seen that played out. You know, you're probably headed toward, you know, major, you know, all these, you know, four, you know, 16-team super conferences, whatever it might be. But it's a shame about the rivalries. There's no question about it. But it's just a sign of the changing times.
Mark, let's switch gears a little bit, get local with you. What were your thoughts on the David Wright signing? Did you agree with it?
I think it's great. I mean, I really do. I mean, I think it's great. I think you know, the Mets had to do it. I think he wanted to be here. I think they gave him a very good contract. I think made him the richest contract that a Met has ever gotten in history. I think it's a sign of good things here for the Mets. They got to do more to improve the talent level, but, you know, you can't let franchise players walk away or let this continue to be a distraction. It, you know, it took, you know, time to get the deal done. That's fine. But as long as the deal got done, and it did.
How about R.A. Dickey? Do you expect him to be signed?
You know, I don't know. I think the Mets are going to weigh their options. I think they're going to see what exactly they can get for R.A. Dickey on the trade market. And if it's something of great quality, I think they're going to trade R.A. Dickey. But if it's not, no one meets their asking price, whatever that might be, I think then you'll see R.A. Dickey probably signed to a contract extension. Either way, you know, I think it'll probably be figured out in the next week or so.
How old is R.A. Dickey, by the way?
How is he?
How old is he? How old is he?
Oh, how old is he? He's 38 years old.
30, okay. So, I mean, yeah, it would make sense not to try. I mean, 30 years makes sense not to sign him to a long-term deal. But it's just a strange situation seeing a guy come off a Cy Young Award and a dominant Cy Young Award at that. He beat out some great competition and was great this year, be in that, you know, predicament where we might not sign or he could sign. It's a very strange and unique situation. It's not something you see in baseball a lot with guys of that magnitude. So he pitches.
Right, but I mean, he is a knuckleballer. He is 38.
38,
he's
right.
He's a guy that throws the ball, you know, much harder than a Wakefield does. So velocity has a lot to do with his success. So, I mean, I think there are a number of factors there. And you got to look at it. I mean, you got to think, well, I'm going to trade high, sell low. I mean, you know, trade high and buy low. And if you look at it, the Mets picked up R.A. Dickey off the scrap heap. Omar Minaya did and brought him into this organization. And I think the very fact of if you can go out there and help your team and deal from a position of strength, and starting pitching certainly is with, you know, Matt Harvey there and Zach Wheeler coming up through the farm system. You got John Neese signed to a contract extension. You know, you've got starting pitching to deal with. And I know he's coming off of Cy Young, but if you can trade off, you know, a Dickey and help your team in a couple different spots, because the Mets have got a lot of holes to fill, I think it's something you got to really think about doing.
How about with the basketball, Mark? Has the city took to the whole New York, Brooklyn, this whole dynamic with those two teams, especially with the Brooklyn Nets? How, like, what is it? What has been the kind of atmosphere with those two teams?
I think that, you know, I think it takes time, any kind of, you know, nasty rivalry. I think, you know, I think there is, I think there's been a lot of, you know, talk, especially by the Nets and the Brooklyn organization, at the Knicks. But yeah, I mean, when you have, you know, one team playing in the borough of Brooklyn, the other playing in the borough of Manhattan, and, one being the Knicks, which has been the city's team for, since the age of time. And now you look at the Brooklyn Nets and, you know, they're both quality teams. They're both playing good basketball right now. They do it in a different style and fashion. I think certainly the rivalry will pick up and more, especially if these two teams should happen to meet in the playoffs. But it's been fun, Cyril. It really has been. It's been it's good to see, you know, NBA basketball relevant in New York with, you know, having big-time relevancy once again.
Mark, K. Smith made a good point, a great point about those two teams. When you compare them to, like, the Lakers and the Clippers, I mean, Clippers will never be the Lakers. Lakers, you know, one of the great franchises in sports. But with the Knicks having not won since the 70s, you know, the Nets really have an opportunity to kind of steal some fans. I mean, do you agree with that?
I think if you're a fan of a team and you're a longstanding fan of a team, I think it's hard to really jump ship. And no longer root for a team, wake up one day and say, now I'm a Brooklyn Nets fan and they're no longer root for the Knicks. Yeah, I mean, do they have an opportunity? Yeah, here's the one thing. I mean, the Knicks have not won as much as the Lakers. There's no question about it. And, you know, the Nets have been more successful, you know, in Jersey than the Clippers have been out there in Los Angeles, you know, going to two NBA finals with, you know, during the Jason Kidd days. But I think they can take some basketball fans in Brooklyn that weren't traveling to the Garden or couldn't afford to go to the Garden. Now they can go to the Barclays Center and watch some quality basketball. But do I think all of a sudden, if the Nets should go on some run, that all of a sudden the Nets are going to be this city's team? No, I think the Knicks and will always be the city's team, and Madison Square Garden will always be the mecca for NBA basketball. And, you know, that's how it's described. That's how, you know, people love, you know, LeBron James loves coming, Kobe, Michael did in his day, coming to Madison Square Garden and putting on a show. And I don't think that's going to change. I think MSG is still MSG, and the Knicks are the Knicks.
Yeah, I don't think that he meant it in the context of them just taking over, but there are, and this is part of the point, there are some fans who, you know, when you talk about, say, 15, you know, teenage fans or even like 15 to 20-year-old fans, 20 years old, who the last time the Knicks made the playoffs but last time the Knicks won a playoff series were, you know, might not have been born or like 8, 9, 10 years
right,
old.
Right, I can understand someone who's 15 years old deciding if they're in Brooklyn want to switch. That's fine. I'm talking about someone who's, you know, 25, 30, 35 years old or 40 years old, 45, who's been a Knicks fan their entire life that's living in Brooklyn. I don't think all of a sudden you're going to get them saying, well, you know what, now I'm rooting for the Brooklyn Nets. I think that think that's tough to think that. But can they have a little bit of a sway? Certainly. I mean, listen, success breeds fans. We know that. You give them something to watch, people are going to show up. And, you know, the Knicks have been bad for a while. They really have been. And they were embarrassingly bad. And the Nets at times were able to take advantage of that in Jersey when, you know, they were able to have some very, very good basketball teams. Now they got a good team in Brooklyn. We'll see how it plays out over the city. It's going to be fun to watch. I think they probably can take some fans. So I think they're going to take a lot of them? Probably not.
How about the Knicks, Mark? Got off to a fast start, playing well. Carmelo Anthony's playing as well as he's played throughout the course of his career, finally trying to defend and trying to rebound. What do you think is the upside for this team, considering that they have been missing basically two starters with Shumpert and, of course, Amari Stoudemire? How about their prospects for this year?
I think it's great. I mean, I think they're playing well. They play good team basketball. They've been very good at shooting the ball from behind the arc. You know, defense has probably lapsed in the last four or five games. They got to get back to playing better defensive basketball. But I think Woodson's got this team's ear. You like a lot of the veterans that they've added to this team. When they get healthier, maybe Stoudemire is going to be coming off the bench. Shumpert, we know, had a very good rookie season before he blew out his knee in that Miami series. So I think there are some things to really like about the Knicks. The one thing, and you love kids' leadership that they have on the team, but, you know, the Knicks are have a big-time relevant team in the Eastern Conference, no question.
Are you one of those people who thinks that Stoudemire, now he's saying the right things now, but as we all know, things change once game time, once the lights come on. Are you one that he can take to the six-man role if he's asked to do that?
Yeah, I think they have, but I think they got to keep him happy. You know, Cyril, I think it's anything else. First off, as long as they're winning, I think it's fine. I don't think Amari has come across as this big-time selfish guy. I think he gets frustrated when they aren't winning and he's not getting his touches, which, you know, he's a big-time impact scorer. I think anybody would be frustrated in those instances when the Knicks are losing games or we're losing last year and he's getting 9-10 shots a game. I mean, that's not making good use of the talent of the player that Amari Stoudemire is. But, you know, if you put him on the second team and he becomes that go-to guy on the second team and he gets his touches and gets his points, you know what? I think Amari and they're winning basketball games, I think he'll be just fine.
Which team do you think has the bigger upside for this year, Knicks or Nets?
You know, it's a great question. I'd probably side with the Knicks. You know, I think the Nets, to me, a little soft down low, rebounding-wise. Defense has been better after, you know, first three or four games. The defense was atrociously bad. But, you know, I'd probably side with the Knicks. But I think it's close. I mean, I really do. I think everyone's chasing the Heat. I think the Heat, and I think everyone, you know, believes that. I'm not saying anything that jumping out on any kind of limb there, Cyril, but
no,
I think everyone's chasing the Heat. I mean, I think it's the Heat, and I think you draw a couple of lines, and then I think it's everybody else. I mean, I don't think Brooklyn's on the level of Miami. I don't think the Knicks are. I don't think Boston is. You know, I think, you know, both teams have got their positives. I think both teams do it in a little bit different way. It's going to be fun to see, you know, what the Nets do against the Heat later on this evening. So, you know, it's going to be fun tonight to see exactly if Brooklyn can bounce back after getting destroyed down in Miami earlier on in the regular season. So, but I think the Heat are the best team, not just in the East, but also in the NBA.
I will not disagree with that. The problem is in terms of taking on the Heat is their weakness. Nobody. There's only one team to me that can beat the Heat, and they're a head case right now with what's going on in that city, and that's of course the Lakers, because nobody has a dominant big man other than the Lakers. So I think if you try to play the small ball with the Heat or don't have that dominant big man, I don't think you can beat them. I think that's when you look at the best teams in the league, Oklahoma City and San Antonio's and Boston's. They have, but they don't have that dominant big man. And the Heat, they're not going to beat the Heat at their own game. So.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't sleep on Memphis. I really wouldn't. You know, I
yeah,
think
they
the
would
Grizzlies.
be, yeah, those that they would be the one team too. That's a good point. Memphis and the Lakers in terms of the just pure matchups.
Yeah, because you look at Gasol and with Randolph, I mean, they certainly have the size that can be able to cause some wreak some havoc as far as Miami's concerned.
Yeah, those would be the two teams. Mark, as always, it's been great having you on the show. You know, enjoy the rest of your weekend. I look forward to having you on in the future.
You got it, sir. Hopefully you had a good Thanksgiving and happy holidays. All right, man?
All right, you too, Mark. Take it easy.
All right, have a good weekend.
Yeah, of course, Mark Malus has given us a lot on the New York sports scene and a tough loss for Rutgers. I can't say devastating because I'm from New Jersey. You have to remember that. And when I was growing up, Rutgers football was an afterthought. Matter of fact, it wasn't even a thought. Nobody thought twice about Rutgers football. Rutgers football, to see where the program is at now, it is remarkable. Certainly, you would have liked to get to a BCS bowl, no question. Losing, and I think the Louisville loss didn't hurt as much as the Pittsburgh loss. Because Louisville has been ranked for the majority of the season. I mean, Louisville is just as good, if not better, than Rutgers from a talent standpoint. Have a great quarter, excellent quarterback, good play, and just good players all around. Losing to Pittsburgh, there's no excuse to losing to Pittsburgh. You can't lose to Pittsburgh. I mean, period. That is a bad loss all the way around. Louisville loss is not a bad loss. The Pittsburgh loss is an awful loss. So that one, to me, would be the one that hurt the most out of the two losses. But, you know, better days are ahead for Rutgers. They're going into the Big East, excuse me, the Big Ten. They're going to have more money, more resources to recruit players. I guarantee you that, you know, I think their stadium capacity is around 40,000. They will add to that stadium. I guarantee you in the next 5 to 10 years, that stadium will be at 70,000 or 80,000 people without question because they'll have money to add to the stadium, similar to what we see on assault with Florida State and Penn State do in terms of adding to their stadiums, the capacities. With their stadiums to create an even more formidable home field advantage. When we return, we will talk week 13 NFL football. That's coming up on the edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back.
Collect your attention.
5 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Of course, you just heard from Mark Melusis, week number 13 of NFL football. Not a week of big-time matchups. I mean, probably I would be the Redskins-Giant game probably, excuse me, is the most intriguing of the, and most exciting of all the matchups. Very weak slate of games, games of NFL football. I mean, Tampa Bay, Denver should be interesting. You know, yeah, Minnesota, Green Bay. See how Green Bay can rebound off that just shellacking they took from the Giants. Seattle, Chicago should be a good matchup with those two defenses. Seattle will have those two quarterbacks playing. Brown and Sherman will play as they are appealing in the suspension. Again, not a good, you know, the Pittsburgh-Baltimore loses its luster considering who's missing. I mean, you have no Roethlisberger. So that matchup certainly goes down a couple pegs without him in the lineup. And Pittsburgh just can't, you know, you can't function without Roethlisberger. I mean, they have no offense whatsoever. They have no offense whatsoever. I mean, Charlie Batch, you know, when you're relegated to Charlie Batch, your team's not going to do, should be expected to do too much. I mean, you think about it, I was thinking about this the other day when I looked at the schedule. NBC had no way to flip and change up the Philadelphia-Dallas game. Coming into the season, Philadelphia-Dallas game would have been a great primetime matchup. And you wouldn't have thought that it would have been a candidate to get flipped, to get flexed out of his spot. But right now, that game just has nothing. Philadelphia is not healthy. They're terrible. Dallas is under 500. But there's no other matchup to really replace that with that's even worthy of switching, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, you got Cleveland, Oakland, Cincinnati, San Diego. Again, not a big-time weekend of NFL football, but if you're a Redskins Giant fan, you'll have a great matchup on Monday night as the Giants take on the Redskins. An awful, but I mean awful, Thursday night game with Atlanta and New Orleans. I mean, it was a dreadful game, you know, to the edge, and I'm sure fantasy owners were not happy as well, as it was just nobody scored hardly. Nobody put up any big numbers, but just to watch, it was just a brutal game. I was back and forth with that and the Rutgers-Louisville game, but that and also the Miami-San Antonio as well, considering what was going on with Popovich sitting as best players. Yeah, I mean, I'll say it right now, the Thursday night game is just, to me, it's a joke. I mean, I honestly need to get rid of it. Just get rid of the Thursday night game. The quality of Thursday night games this year has been awful. The level of play has been dreadful. I think, you know, besides it being a short week, it's just, I think it takes something out of teams if you play on Thursday nights, to be honest with you. And if you're not going to get the good matchups, then what's the point? And that Thursday night game, they're going to get, out of the primetime games, they're going to get the worst matchups, period. You know, Sunday night's going to get the best. Sunday, Monday, then Thursday, in that order, as far as quality of primetime matchups. And like I said, Atlanta, New Orleans looked good before the season started, but, you know, with New Orleans struggling, certainly took some off that matchup. And also, neither team played well. It was just an awful, awful football game to watch as Atlanta improved to 11-1 on the season. Still, I mean, you know, five games left in the season. NFL's still wide open as far as I'm concerned. I think it's going to be a situation similar to last year and the previous year where it depends on the hot team. Who is going to be the hot team moving forward? And that's what I think is going to determine the NFL champion. I mean, you could certainly make a case for the Giants, certainly make a case, you know, San Francisco, Atlanta are in the mix. Baltimore's going to be in the mix. New England, Houston, but there's no by any stretch of imagination a dominant team. There isn't by any stretch. There's no team that's going to run it high from anybody. You will not. I mean, again, it will come down to the health. The two H's: healthy and hot. You're healthy going into the playoffs, and you're hot going into the playoffs. That to me will determine who will be playing in New Orleans in the Super Bowl. So, I think quiet week of NFL football. We'll see what happens though. Of course, in the Monday night game with the Giants and the Redskins. When we return, we will talk about the state of the NBA. I'm not happy about the NBA right now. A very not a good weekend for the NBA in general. We'll talk about that and just the overall state of the NBA. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Oh, excuse me, the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be right back. On this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you, of course, to 1 o'clock as we discuss the world of sports. Of course, the call number is 347-215-6180. Oklahoma up on TCU 7-0 as Oklahoma looks to keep their BCS hopes alive. They need to win and also have Kansas State lose to get a clutching BCS bowl. Let me give you the NBA schedule last night, because it was an awful slate of games. I'm going to go through these matchups one by one and just the overall state of the NBA right now as I pull it up here. You had Phoenix, Toronto, Philadelphia, Charlotte, Brooklyn, Orlando, Boston, Portland, the Knicks and the Wizards, Cleveland taking on Atlanta, Detroit against Memphis, Oklahoma City against Utah, Minnesota and Milwaukee, Sacramento, Indiana, and the Lakers taking on Denver. Of course, I'm sure, and of course, you're missing Miami playing and a couple other teams playing. But the overall NBA product right now is just is awful. I mean, I had to say overall, there are about six, seven teams that are watchable. The majority of these matchups are just bad games. And, again, contraction, there are certain cities who just don't need basketball. I don't know what the NBA is going to do, and I don't know what the NBA is going to do. I mean, certainly shortening the season could be to their benefit, but that's not going to happen from a money standpoint. But I mean, the level of basketball right now, the level of play of basketball right now is just, it's bad. It's just not very good. I mean, majority is getting, listen, if it's not a marquee matchup, if it's not, Boston play at Miami, Lakers versus Spurs, something of that nature, then the games ain't good. The games are not any good. There's just not that many quality teams in the NBA right now. There's a lot of talent. There's a tremendous amount of talent, but there's just not. But the level of it, but the overall teams are just not very good. And, I don't know what the NBA can do other than, and they're not going to contract, which they should. Come on, there are about three or four NBA teams that just don't need, three or four NBA cities that just don't need, to have teams. I mean, that's all that goes without saying. But the overall, I like that is it's really stood out this year. The overall product in the NBA is just is bad. It's not good. And I do these games at, in terms of carrying and broadcasting at one of my at one of my jobs. So I see what games are being, see the, watch the games for the most part, and do some of the game, some of these broadcasts, and this is bad basketball. Of course, the if not for the Greg Popovich story, the biggest story of this week in the NBA would have been the Boston Celtic, Brooklyn Nets scuffle. It wasn't a fight; it was a scuffle, and it's where in which where Ron Rajon Rondo was kicked out and ended his consecutive game streak of more 10 or more assists. He had 37 straight games with 10 more assists. I think it's the best thing to ever happen to the Celtics, to be honest with you. I think it was becoming more that their, that those their games were becoming more about his streak, and that was, affecting, has affected, how they play. I mean, everybody, endorsing the Boston broadcast, all you hear about was Rondo's streak, the streak, and he continued the streak. And you even had, I mean, even there was even a game against Detroit a couple of weeks ago where Rondo and the Doc Rivers went out of their way to make sure he got that 10th assist. And it was a disgrace. Detroit had blown the Celtics out. The game was clearly decided, but they made, excuse me, made a point for him to get that 10th assist. And you had Rondo passing up shots in order, to get assists. And just and now, you start fresh. Nobody's talking about a streak. Nobody's talking about a streak. You just play basketball. I get to some of the issues that the Celtics had, that Doc Rivers talked about after the Brooklyn game and calling his team soft. So now you can just focus in on basketball. I thought this too much was made about that particular streak. Of course, last night Lakers blow out Denver 122-103, and that's what's going to be the Lakers for the, for the. Until Nash gets back, for the better part, maybe probably until February or so, where one night they're gonna look great, the next night they're gonna look terrible. I mean, they score 122 points against Denver, and they struggle to crack. They don't crack 80 against Indiana at home. So in the span of basically 2 to 3 days, that you get that big of a difference between how they looked offensively in terms of how they looked offensively. So they're gonna be up and down. They're going to be up and down without question. Going to take a while. They might have to get a couple of shooters. I think they're going to have to move Gasol. There's no question to me. I think they're going to have to move Gasol. It's announced that the Chiefs will play the Panthers, indeed, that the team was advised to travel. So that game will take place, but under, under a black cloud that is a basically a murder-suicide in Kansas City. But I think they're going to get I think they're going to move Gasol for a stretch four and some other pieces to add to their bench. I don't think Gasol just doesn't fit, with D'Antoni's system. You say, why give up Gasol, another 7-footer? Game has changed. It's become more small ball. They still have Dwight Howard. Maybe you trade Gasol for a bruiser and a couple of shooters, or a stretch four and a couple of shooters. But the point is that Gasol is just not. Gasol is not playing well. And listen, Lakers got two championships out of Gasol. He just things might have just have ran their course with the Paul Gasol in Los Angeles Laker marriage, so I expect him to be moved before the trade deadline in February. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will get back. We will go back to where we started. At the top of the show. 51 minutes after 12 o'clock hour. We'll be right back.
When you walk through the garden.
Final game as the winner of Alabama and Georgia will play the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, who went through a season undefeated 12-0. Love them or hate them, they beat everybody that they had to beat. They beat 9 ranked teams, so they had a tough schedule. Even though the Big Ten is down, they still listen. You go on the road and beat Oklahoma and USC. They're saying something called a break with USC and no Matt Barkley, but that's not their fault. Deserve to be in the game, and they certainly, whoever it is, whether it's Georgia, Alabama, it will be a competitive game. I think they will beat Georgia if Georgia upsets Alabama, to be honest with you. I think they'll beat Georgia because I just don't trust Georgia in a big spot. And that's why I think Alabama's going to beat Georgia today. Nick Saban has lived in this game. Alabama has lived in these big games year in and year out. Georgia, I understand Georgia did beat Florida this year, but Georgia has had a habit of falling short in these big games and winning these big games. This is a critical game for Mark Richt and that program. They've been to BCS games before, but they've never won SEC. They haven't won an SEC championship since 2002. When the conference wasn't where it was at right now, this would take them to another level if they were to win this game. Alabama wins, it's going to be ho-hum. Alabama trying to repeat winning another national championship. This game is bigger for Georgia than it is Alabama. Georgia needs to go out there and win this game to even raise their program to an even higher status. Again, Alabama has lived in this game. Georgia certainly have the talent to compete and beat Alabama. They have the necessary, things you have to be at to compete in Alabama. I think a great defense and a great quarterback. And they have both those things. Aaron Murray, we saw what Johnny Manziel did against Alabama a couple weeks back. Aaron Murray is going to be a pro. Is going to be a pro at the next level, without question. So they have some weapons that can hurt Alabama. But again, I like Alabama in this game. I don't see Alabama blowing an opportunity, a second opportunity to play for another national championship. You know, last year they get the opportunity to play against LSU the second time, and they destroy LSU. Again, this game will be much closer. It'll be very competitive, without a doubt. But I like Alabama in a close game, and Nick Saban to meet Notre Dame in a dream national championship. You're talking about two of the most story. If it is indeed Notre Dame, Alabama, I mean, you can't get in terms of prestige. You can't basically get a better national championship matchup come January. But don't be surprised if the Georgia Bulldogs come out on top again. They played well all season long. The defense is playing well right now. Again, they have a tremendous quarterback. In Aaron Murray. Again, we're still waiting on details about the Kansas City Chiefs football player who allegedly killed his girlfriend and also killed himself in a murder-suicide situation. Just found in the parking lot at Arrowhead Stadium. Of course, it must have happened early this morning. The game between Kansas City and Carolina still will be played. That NFL told Carolina to travel. The only thing we know is, you know, the guy obviously played for the Chiefs. He's a black male, and he killed his girlfriend and then killed himself. So I think as the day goes along, they will get more details about that situation. Just a tragic situation, last thing the NFL needs right now in terms of some of the stuff, in terms of something like this happening. But a tragic situation in the world of sports, in the NFL, and also the world of sports. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be back on Monday to do a preview show, or we'll be back on Tuesday to take a look at the review, have a special Redskin report, as we'll talk about the Monday night game against the Giants. So Redskins, Giants, we'll have a special Tuesday Redskin report. We'll be back then. I'll see you then. So long.